Hello, this is Jim McKeith, and welcome to another episode of the podcast at Delphi.org. Today, I'm going to be talking to Embarcadero MVP Jens Fudge from Denmark. Jens Fudge is being highlighted this week as our MVP of the week, so I thought it'd be a great time to publish this podcast, even though I actually recorded it quite a while ago, but never got around to publishing it. So here it is. It's a little dated, but it's still interesting to get to know Jens better. Welcome, Jens, to the podcast at Delphi.org. Thanks for joining me.
You're welcome, and thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. So, actually, right before we were just chatting, that it's been 7 years since I came out to Denmark to speak at the DEPOG users group.
Yeah, it was 7 years ago that you were here, and that was great fun. And ever since then, we've had loads of great speakers at the DEPOG users group here. Yeah. So we're just keeping busy and just carrying on.
I wanted to talk with you today just about what it is you do as a Delphi developer and also as an MVP. So I know you've been using Delphi for quite a while now. When did you start using Delphi?
Well, I first started using Delphi, as we say in Europe here, back in 1995 when Dr. Kerry Jensen was here for a presentation. And with him, he brought some copies of the software. The presentation that he held was you had to pay to get in to see the presentation, but you also got the free Delphi CD, the Delphi 1 CD. So that's when I started.
Okay, very cool. So was he there presenting specifically about Delphi? I'll use the correct pronunciation since I'm...
He was presenting just on Delphi, yes.
Okay.
Yes, that was the main object because everyone... everyone had been programming in Turbo Pascal or something, or maybe even Visual C++, which wasn't really that visual, or Visual Basic, which was visual but not very good. So he presented with Delphi, and everyone had a laugh, and it was marvelous. I do remember that one of the things he showed, which was very fun, was he said he was going to do a complete multimedia application from scratch. The application was supposed to be able to play an AVI file. And he was going to do that in less than a minute.
Wow.
So he had two timers with stopwatches, and of course he did it wrong in the beginning, so he had to start from scratch. So he did it twice in under a minute.
Did it twice in under a minute.
Yeah, so that was awesome. Everyone was just awestruck. That was pretty good. So I guess that's how I got hooked with Delphi, and that's how a lot of other people got hooked with Delphi.
You know, it's interesting. Delphi does a good job, in my opinion, of making easy stuff really just ridiculously easy. The stuff you do a lot, like connecting to a database or playing multimedia or something like that.
Yeah.
But then the thing I love about it is there's a lot of other tools out there that do that have, like, you know, oh, here's a starter wizard that gets you going with a type of app and makes some things easy. But then when you go to do the rest of the stuff, Delphi still makes it pretty easy to do. You know, it doesn't really get in your way where a lot of other tools is like, well, if you're not doing the easy wizard-driven stuff, well, you're inventing it all from scratch. It becomes a nightmare.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I find that to be very true with Delphi. I've for many years loved the fact that I didn't really have to know very much about Windows programming. It's just there. It just works. It's hidden behind the scenes. I don't have to know very much about Windows at all to be able to write an application for Windows.
Right.
Which is weird, but it works.
Yeah. And then if you do want to understand Windows messages and handles and stuff like that,
you can go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it still works.
Yeah, because I first started learning with Delphi, I didn't know all the Windows messages and handles and stuff, and then I saw some.
No, of course not. Yeah.
What is this black magic this is doing here?
And yes, exactly. And I think that the companies that have owned the copyright for Delphi, they've done a marvelous job of doing just so. Yeah, it does make life easy for being a programmer.
Yep. What is it Chuck Jay that started blogging recently? Did you see that? Was that who it is? I can't remember who it was.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, Chuck Jowski. I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong. It's removingalldoubt.com.
Okay, yeah.
Anyway, he
I haven't seen that. No.
Oh, okay. Chuck Jazdzewski. Pronouncing his name. Jazdzewski. He was one of the original architects on Delphi.
Okay. Delphi,
working with Anders Hausberg.
Oh, cool.
And was also hired away later on by I think Microsoft hired him away, and now he's working for Google. But he
okay.
started a blog called removingalldoubt.com where he's talking about some of the stuff, some of the ideas and some of the stuff that they implemented in Delphi way back, you know, back in 94, 95 time frame.
Ah, cool.
It's really interesting because it talks about some of the choices that were made and why they did some things that they did and stuff like that. And
yeah.
It's great. Now I'm trying to remember why I brought this up. But it's interesting reading it because it makes sense because you really get to understand why Delphi was ahead of its time. And I think still is a relevant tool and still a very powerful tool with lots of great features today because
it absolutely is, yes.
But I think a lot of that is because, you know, even the VCL was very tightly tied to Windows.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The concepts, the way that everything was designed was not so much tied to the Windows framework. And so that's one of the reasons we were able to, you know, like when we were developing at the time, you didn't have to understand Windows to develop with VCL.
Yeah.
And now that's extended and now we can develop on iOS and Android and not really need to understand those platforms. But if we do, we can still on Android pass intents and receive intents.
Yes.
And
stuff like that. It's very cool. Yeah.
Just like
those. I really like the way that every bit that you don't need to know, it's hidden for you, and just that you just write your program, just understand the concept of programming, and then just forget about what platform is going on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it was great when XE5 came out, which is right when I joined Embarcadero here.
There was lots of
customers had developed iOS apps in XE4.
Yeah.
XE5 rolled out with Android support, and they're like, oh, and so they add Android as target, recompile on Android, and it's like, oh, well, I just need to change this button so that it anchors to the right instead of the, you know.
Yeah, it's done.
Yeah.
And in XE3, I think it was possible to do iOS programming there, but that was with some more tedious work going on. You had to move the source code to your Mac and then compile it through Xcode if you installed the FreePascal compiler and something like that. But the XE4 made it possible to just do everything from Delphi and have the platform assistant server take over from there.
Yeah. Yep. And you know, I get to
come and on. As you say, adding Android to it doesn't hurt at all.
No, it's great. And it was interesting because when, you know, I think when they first started out down this path of mobile development, iOS was really entrenched as the leader. But I think about the time XE5 rolled out, Android was really giving iOS a run for its money. And I think that, you know, it was a good time to do that because a lot of people were moving to Android and excited about Android.
Yes, well, some things are easier on Android, not because of the technology, but because of the political aspect of it.
That's true. That is true. You don't have to worry about all the certificates and all that stuff.
Yes.
So I guess now's a good time as any to ask the all-important question. Do you personally use iOS or Android for your own phone, and why?
Actually, I have two phones. I have an iPhone 4S, and I have a Google Nexus 5.
Okay.
And when smartphones came out, I started with the iOS, with the Apple iPhone 3G, I think it was called. Uh-huh. That was before Android was even there. And I really liked and still do like the Apple iPhone. It's a great telephone and it's very easy to use. The thing against it is that you cannot tweak and twerk as much as you can on Android, but that's also a pro.
Yes.
That you cannot do anything. It just works.
And when it doesn't, it doesn't.
And when it doesn't, it's really a hassle because it doesn't work then.
Yeah.
But with Android, I can virtually do anything I want to, and I can even mess up my phone if I want to.
Yep.
So, as being a developer, I have both. That's obviously just because I need to put out applications on both platforms, be able to test it. I know I could use the simulator for iPhone. I could use the emulator for Android, but I don't really believe in testing on simulators or emulators. I want to test it on the device instead.
Yeah, it's certainly, I mean, the simulator can be one level of testing, but until you get an actual device, you don't really know what it's going to look like and behave.
Yeah, and I don't even use the simulator emulator for internal testing either, because it's just sticking it on the device directly is much quicker anyway.
Yeah, it's so easy, exactly.
Yeah. So there's no point in using an emulator simulator.
Yeah. Yeah. So now, are you currently doing mobile development then?
Yes, I am. Yeah. For a local fitness club here in the town where I live, I'm doing a very small app that's going to enable the people to sign up for different classes at the fitness at the gym. And I have been doing a bodybuilder app with Mr. Universe from the United Kingdom, Jason Corrick. I did a bodybuilding app with him for iOS. I did that with XE5 and stuck it on App Store, which was pretty cool.
I remember that.
Yeah. And of course, I'm doing some archery stuff on the phones too. I've built an archery timer system for archery contests. Actually, I built that the first version of it I built in 1995 with the first version of Delphi, so that was running on Windows 16-bit.
Okay.
And then when Windows 32 came out, which was multi-process Windows. The timing went off on it because I was just using a normal T timer that clicked every 1,000 milliseconds, and that was every 1 second. Mm-hmm. But as Windows 32-bit was a multi-process operating system, the timing wasn't thread safe, so I had to figure something else out to do. And later on now, in, well, 20 years later, I've rewritten the program in FireMonkey so that I can also run it on Mac. And using the technology that Embarcadero provided for me called App Tethering, I've made a remote control for it on the mobile phone.
Oh, so the phone is the remote control for the
yes.
desktop app.
Yes, exactly. So this enables the director of shooting, as he's called, to start and stop the shooting, start and stop music, and display advertisements on the screens.
Wow. So now, for those that don't know, you have archery has a special place in your heart.
I do, yes. I've been doing archery since 1987. Yeah, I started in 1987. I don't shoot anymore, but I did start there, and I shot very well, and in 1992 I won the Paralympic Games in archery.
Yeah,
I've been a Nordic champion, European champion, and stuff like that.
So you were a medalist then?
Gold yes, medal? Yes, I won the gold medal in the Paralympics 1992 in Barcelona, Spain.
Wow! Yeah, I remember. I saw a video of that you had on YouTube.
There is an old video on the YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty impressive. Very impressive.
Thanks.
And so now you do a lot of like archery judging and stuff like that, don't you?
Yes, I do. I'm a fully qualified judge for archery. And also, if we do have big events here in Denmark, I'm quite often involved in them somehow too. And then, of course, I do software for archery. So I'm trying to figure out new software for archers all the time.
Yeah, I think that's probably... I always find that interesting when we have a interest and we look at ways to apply programming to solve those interests.
Yeah, it's fun. I think archery is fun, and I think developing software is fun. Even though I do live on developing software, I still regard it as, well, kind of a hobby. It's just a hobby where people pay me to do it.
Exactly, exactly. So now, in addition to your archery software, I know you've worked at a number of interesting consulting jobs or jobs doing Delphi development around Denmark.
Yes, I have. I've actually always been working as a consultant, even from my first day at work. I worked for a consultancy company, and not only Denmark, but I've done for the Norwegian Railway Company. I did some software to put the timetables and stuff like that, whenever the train is coming to which platform, mm-hmm. and all the signs and monitors all throughout Norway. And before the Bulgarian Environmental Agency, I did software for tracking where they have hazardous waste. So it's very interesting doing the Delphi programming. You get to go and see places.
I knew you had done some work with a railway, but I can't remember where it was. So it was in Norway.
Yeah, that was Norway. Yeah.
Now, was that system, was it just displaying timing information, or was it gathering information about when the train was coming and where, keeping track of, make sure the train was on schedule?
It was not making sure that the trains were on schedule, but it was displaying for the customers if the train was not on schedule.
Okay.
And it was also for the operators to, they could move trains around, assigning platforms to trains and put it displaying different messages and stuff like that.
Okay, so it would tell you the train scheduled to arrive at this time, but it is running late.
Yeah, and the complete system, there was also some delay calculation stuff. Norway is a very, very long country. So if a train is delayed from the northern part of the country, it's quite easy to catch up some of the of the lost time during the trip down to Oslo, for instance. So the calculation of this was done in the system too. But this was done on a Unix box, so that was not with Delphi, the calculation. That was done with C.
Really?
Just all ANSI C, yeah.
Interesting that part was done in a different system.
Well, the railway company, they had a couple of IBM AIX machines running Unix, mm-hmm. which were the heart of the system, had the Oracle database stuck on it.
Okay.
So I was doing clients for it. Yeah.
Now, I've seen a lot of, we've talked to a lot of people that use Delphi in cases like that. Do you think that there's something about Delphi that's specifically well suited for systems like that, or is it maybe just because it's a great tool all around, or what's your opinion on that?
Well, I think that Delphi is and has always been one of the greatest tools there is to talk to a database. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the purpose of Delphi being born, actually. It was to talk to database. And as far as I heard, that the Delphi name also even came from that, because they wanted to do some word gaming on it. Was like the Oracle from Delphi from ancient Greek.
Yes, that's what I've heard. It was originally just the code name, but yes.
Yes, it was, yeah. But it was supposed to be a database tool, but for some reason it also is a tool for everything else.
Yeah. I think that goes back to the original, because I think, like I was talking about before, because it was designed, in my opinion, so well, that it was a general purpose tool, but had these great features like for multimedia or for talking to databases. It just made it just so easy and worked so well. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was, as far as I know, the first tool ever that talked to so many different databases.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It did. I remember when I first was learning Delphi and showing that to a coworker at the time, and he was just like, wow, that database is like usually really hard to do in applications. Like, oh, yeah, look, just boop, boop, we're done. Yeah.
And the great thing about the database programming in Delphi, as it has been from Delphi 1 and it still is now, but now with different technology, with Viaduct, it doesn't matter for you as the developer what kind of database you're talking to. It's the same components that you use.
Yeah, yeah.
So the way to use it, it's exactly the same.
I was really pleased that they Embarcadero purchased FireDAC, originally AnyDAC, and made it part of the product, because that was, it's such a great, great tool.
Really a great framework,
talking to databases. And, you know, BDE was great, but it had, you know, it's kind of heavyweight, and then to have all that functionality
had a few flaws here and there, but at the time it was the best there was.
Exactly. But then to have, we kind of, when we went away from the BDE, we lost some of that richness and some of that functionality, but now the FireDAC brings all that back.
In a nice, it does, yes. Framework. Yeah, yeah. I heard some story about the FireDAC frameworks was actually created with the developers having to bear in mind that it had to resemble the BDE as much as possible.
Well, I don't know for sure, but I know that there's a lot of other frameworks that did resemble the BDE quite a bit from that time period that were trying to be the BDE even better. Because the BDE had a lot of features. It was just really heavyweight. Yeah. So everybody was trying to make a lighter weight version of that.
Mm. Yeah.
There was there was a guy I knew, I can't remember his name now, that made the BDE alternative guide that was a website that listed all these alternatives to the BDE. So it was BDE functionality in different platforms. Let me see if I can find it. Mm-hmm. BDE alternative guide. Delphi Bag. What's the guy's name? Digital Oasis. Kyle Kords. That's the guy's name.
Okay.
Yeah, it's still there. DelphiBag.com.
Oh, cool.
Anyway. There's... The BDE, like I said, it set a high bar of functionality, but then a lot of people were trying to find ways to improve on it. But now, I mean, not to say that FireDAC's the only tool out there. That's one of the things I love about Delphi. There's so many tools to choose from, so many different frameworks or libraries I can pull in and use instead. If it's like, oh, I kind of like this feature of this other framework, I can do that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But, and even adding frameworks, different frameworks to Delphi is... Ever since Delphi 1, it's been very easy just to do it.
Yes. Exactly. You can just take a package and say, install this package, and boom, it's installed it. You compiled it, and then I can make a change to that package if I want to, and recompile it, and that component is now updated in my...
Yep. Yep. Or even inherit from it.
Yep.
Yeah.
I remember when I was first doing component development, it was so amazing to me that I could write code in my component that would run in the IDE at design time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got to admit, I did abuse that a few times with some things that should have probably been IDE add-ins or IDE wizards or experts or something like that. But I was doing it through components. But it was great to be able to do that, have that flexibility and power.
Yeah, it's a really... a nice feature of Delphi, having runnable code within the IDE while you're developing something, which makes, again, database development very easy because you even have the data at design time.
Yes, exactly. And then to have that, it's one of those things that was originally on Windows feature, and it was something that really set Delphi apart on Windows, but now we can have that for a cross-platform development. I go do a presentation in front of a Google developer group, a bunch of Android developers, and I'm like, oh, let's build a database application. And, oh, look, we're done. And, hardly any time at all. And I've got a live data preview in the designer. I can preview it on Windows that quick, or boom, now we're running it on Android. And, oh, by the way, it works on iOS as well. And everybody in the room just, blown away by that.
Hey, how did he do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great.
So let's go back to the system you were doing for the Norwegian Railways lines. Mm-hmm. Do you think Delphi is particularly well suited to be able to talk to external sensors and devices and stuff like that? That's something we see a big trend towards today, all these different devices, the Internet of Things and stuff. Do you see that something as being a strength of Delphi from the from way back? Or
yeah, I do. I do remember building some years ago an application for Elico, which is a Swedish sports company that does weightlifting gear. And I do remember talking directly to a monitor through the serial ports, which was fairly easy in Delphi, I think it was. But it's even easier now with everything being Bluetooth enabled. So just add the Bluetooth component and just talk to it. And it's, so Delphi has always been able to talk to external devices, but it's very easy now because everything does Bluetooth.
Yeah, we'll be at before, like, we usually would use like serial or something like that, and you usually had to figure out what exactly the protocol was for communicating with a serial port for each individual device.
Yeah.
Now, have you done, it seemed like I heard you were doing some Bluetooth LE development or Bluetooth development of some sort.
No, I haven't. I haven't really done any Bluetooth stuff yet, but I am looking into it to see how it works.
Okay, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it the you're still writing code. Something I like about Delphi is you're still writing code to get things done. It's not all this magic behind the scenes.
But yeah, you're still writing code, Even though you can use a lot of magic behind the scenes, because you can just, as I said before, you can just use the app tethering, which is kind of two components dropped on a form on two different applications, or even on one application, run it two different places. Mm-hmm. And by magic, they're going to talk together.
Yeah. Actually, I was doing a demo of this remote control car that you talk to via Bluetooth, and I had to be able to control it from Windows machine. But the code I had was written for Android, and so I just wrote app tethering. It took me like 15 minutes. So I created an app on Windows that tethered to the phone so that I could, from Windows, control the car, and that way I could present, made it easier to present that way. But it was great how easy that just worked, and I was actually solving a problem and not just creating a demo around app tethering.
Yeah, I remember, I think that was actually a demo that you built too, where you showed app tethering when it first came out, and then all of a sudden you had voice controlled your Windows machine.
That's right. That's right. I did that with the...
Because the phone did voice control out of the box.
Yep, exactly. Using the, leveraging the voice control, the voice recognition, the voice detect on the phone, and it just sends it right to Windows.
Yeah, that was amazing. How long does it take to build a Windows application that does voice recognition and you can do stuff with? Quite a long time. Well, just use app tethering and you're down to 10 minutes.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, it was really cool. Mm. And actually, I saw somebody else has an app that does that they charge a couple dollars for, that does exactly that same sort of thing.
Cool. As long as they make money on it, that's good.
Yeah, where you use the voice recognition on your phone and it sends it to the text to your desktop.
Great.
Because the phone does a really good job of that, because they use the cloud, right? You talk to your phone and it takes that bit of speech and sends it to the cloud. Mm-hmm. Although Android actually has expanded that, and if it's offline, it does it locally, and it does a pretty good job locally. I was surprised. I was going to show, it's not as good, and did a demo and turned off the Wi-Fi and did it, and it actually got all my text right. So I was like, well, okay.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Pretty good. In addition to your consulting work and such that you're doing with Delphi, I heard you're also doing some training and something along those lines.
Yes. A couple of years ago, I started along with KnowHow, which is the local Delphi reseller in Denmark. He was asked if he knew anyone who'd done training. So, I put together a couple of courses. I call them Delphi Level 1 and Delphi Level 2, very original names. So I've been doing two classes every spring and two classes every autumn.
Okay.
Which is fun. It also keeps me on my toes. That's pretty fun. Yeah,
Are you getting quite a few people in your classes, or?
Well, it varies. The first couple of classes were around 8 people in each class, which is pretty good for a small country like Denmark. Some of the classes have been only maybe 3 or 4, but it's still. It's still feasible. Still get people learning Delphi. Most of them have been programming in other languages, maybe .NET, maybe C#, maybe C++, maybe Java. But now they, for job reasons, switch to Delphi. If they've got a new job or something where they're in the company that they're going to work for, are using Delphi. The easiest way to get up to speed is to have a crash course in a couple of days for it. Because programmers, they know how to do this stuff. They just don't know the library in Delphi to do it.
Sure. Yeah. It's there's two different things. I mean, there's actually learning the fundamentals of programming, but once you know that, then it's just a matter of learning the syntax and the idiosyncrasies of the different
platforms. Yes, exactly, and the different frameworks which are out there. Yeah.
I've had a number of times where I've had coworkers or friends or something like that know how to program, and then either they see me using Delphi or they're curious about it and they learn it and they're like, wow, this is so much more productive and we'll get so much more done with Delphi than with mm-hmm. other tools and frameworks.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that kind of hints from people that attend my classes too. Yeah.
Now, are you teaching mobile development as well, or just fundamentals, or what kind of?
Well, I'm not teaching mobile development as such, but I am just the fundamentals. I will show in the classes how to get the PA server set up on your Mac, how to make sure that you can hook up your phone, your iPhone to the Mac, and sending a simple Hello World application or something onto the on the iPhone and also on the Android. Mm-hmm. So it's not that people are leaving the class without knowledge of how to do this, but it's just not a course in mobile development as such.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Maybe I'll do that later. I don't know. That could, maybe I'll get some customers in on that.
Yeah. I found there's a lot of people that are actually using Delphi now for mobile development, and they're looking for hiring more developers all the time. And
yeah.
And it's always interesting because I hear both sides. I hear the Delphi developers saying that they're looking for work but can't find any, and then I hear the development shop saying they're looking for developers but can't find any. It seems to be ongoing.
The job situation in Denmark with regards to Delphi is that there are very, very few jobs available on the market, but there are very, very few Delphi developers to match those non-existing jobs anyway. So mm-hmm. I think maybe it's a lot of companies have been moving from Delphi to other platforms because they say it's easier to find programmers, but I don't know if that's really a good idea.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have a friend that runs a group of developers doing .NET development, and he says mm-hmm. it's actually not that easy to find .NET developers, to find good .NET developers.
Yeah.
What it is
that's what I think here, because it's very easy to find a .NET developer, but it's very easy to find a .NET developer who has maybe 1 or 2 years of experience or even less.
Yeah, exactly.
If you find a Delphi developer, he's going to have 5 to 10 years plus experience, so he's going to be good.
Yeah. Yeah, and exactly. He said that he'll do like a simple, he's basically, in order for someone to apply for a job, all they have to do is write a app that connects to a database and send him the code.
Yeah.
That's all he requires. Doesn't care what they do, and 90% of people that apply, he gives them that task, he never hears back from them. They can't get that simple of a task done.
Okay.
And, you know, he says that it's,
that's horrible.
It's hard because people hear that there's lots of jobs for .NET developers.
Yeah.
And so they're like, oh, I'm a .NET developer now. And then they're not really a .NET developer. And so then the flip side is that you see all these resumes for .NET developers. You're like, oh, it must mm-hmm. be easy to find a .NET developer. And so you start hiring .NET developers, and it turns out you don't want any of those .NET developers.
Yeah.
So really, what you're looking for is a senior developer, someone that knows their stuff, that's been around the block, that's used a few tools.
Yes.
And a developer like that, you're going to say, okay, we're using Delphi. And if they haven't used Delphi, then they're going to pick it up in a couple mm-hmm. days and be ready to go.
Yeah.
It was interesting. I was actually on a project once that was, interestingly, moving a project from Delphi to .NET.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And we were, because the manager believed that it was easier to find .NET developers. Mm-hmm. And so we hired a couple of contractors. Now, all the people on staff were Delphi developers, but were also learning .NET. So we hired some new people that were .NET developers to come on board and help us out with the project.
Yeah.
And it interestingly turned out they were both, the two guys we hired were both Delphi developers that had changed their resume recently to be .NET developers because they believed there was more work for .NET developers.
okay. Yeah.
And so it was interesting that to see both sides of that dynamic there, where we had changed the project from Delphi to .NET because we believed there were more .NET developers, and they had done the same. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's a belief on both sides. Mm-hmm. And the rewrite from Delphi to .NET took way longer than it was supposed to and never quite worked right and took way more developers. And I hear that theme a lot from people that have tried doing that route.
The only thing that you can say is good about rewriting any program from any language to any other language, it doesn't really matter, is that you know or are supposed to know exactly what it's going to do, this program. Because when you start a program from scratch, you're not sure what it's going to do.
Yeah, that's true. And
it evolves as you go along.
One of the things about this project is it ended up being a rather complex application that all the functionality was not readily apparent. And so even though we thought we knew everything we had to do, as we got further down the line and started talking to developers, the user acceptance testing, they're like, where's this feature? I'm like, I didn't see that in the application. So, anyway, it was an interesting experience.
Yes.
So what are some of the things that you are excited about in Delphi today as far as some of the new stuff going on and directions Delphi is headed?
I really, really do love the thing that we can talk to different platforms that we're on Windows, we're on Mac, iOS, Android, and on the roadmap somewhere is also Linux. So that's really awesome that we can just use one code base and then compile the program for nearly whatever platform we want. That's really good. And also that we're trying to, or Embarcado is trying to keep up with the new technologies that are coming out. Like, for instance, everything now is going IoT. So, well, if Delphi didn't support IoT at all, that would be a problem, because I think that's important now to be able to support IoT.
Right, yeah, to be able to connect all Internet of Things, all those devices and gadgets and stuff.
Because everyone else is going to connect to them.
Yep.
So, yeah.
It was interesting, actually, because when I first started Embarcadero, Michael Swindell came and talked to me and said that he thought the making it easy for developers to connect to different devices and gadgets he thought was important. And so he wanted to put emphasis on that and find examples of devices and gadgets we could connect to. And this was right before the Internet of Things started to kind of emerge as this concept. And then he's like, well, we're already doing this. Let's keep going in this direction.
Interesting,
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's great to see Embarcadero did a great job of making sure Delphi is really staying on top of where things are headed as far as the MEEPs, the mobile enterprise or applications as a backend, applications as a service. Mm. Oh, what is that?
The
BaaS.
BaaS?
Yes. Yeah. So like the BaaS services are added. So the backend as a service support and then the different platforms and the Internet of Things and all that stuff like that. But seeing, you know, oh, hey, here's a new thing that's coming out, a new trend developers are wanting to take advantage of. Oh, hey, look, we see it's in Delphi or it's in the next version of Delphi. And as you pointed out, Linux support's coming soon as well. So
yes. Yeah. I think it's great that Delphi is staying on top. Often when I meet new people and they ask me, what are you doing? I say, oh, I'm a developer. If they know anything about developer, they'll ask, well, what language are you developing? Oh, this is Delphi. Delphi, is that still alive, that old thing, they say? And, well, yeah, but it's not an old thing. It's it started 20 years ago, but it's still brand new.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Very much brand new. Actually, there's a new Delphi for the last couple of years come out every 6 months with tremendous amounts of brand new stuff.
Yeah.
So,
I heard some statistics once about as far as like the amount of reinvestment in R&D that Embarcadero is doing on Delphi. And it's, I can't remember what the numbers are, but and it's one of those things that, you know, not everybody publishes those numbers, but we're definitely are reinvesting a lot in our R&D. They have a huge office in Spain, which
Alicante.
And occasionally people are like, oh, well, you're outsourcing and you're trying to get cheap developers. And actually, Spain is on the euro, so it's actually more expensive to hire developers there than in the US. But because there's a lot of good developers there, we had a good office already and just expanded that and keep expanding it.
Yeah.
And that they're always hiring new developers out there and just really doing a lot of great stuff. So it's exciting. Mm-hmm. Exciting.
Exactly. Yeah. And as far as I know, the main part of Delphi development is now in Spain, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe so. Alan Bowers, our chief scientist, he's in the Scotts Valley office, as well as Darren and a number of other really key developers are still in the Scotts Valley office. But the majority, the bulk of the development is being done in our Spain office now. Yeah. But we also have a few other development centers as well. So, but you're correct. The majority of it is coming out of Spain. But it's interesting. When I was first hired with Embarcadero, they were having me work remote. I was like, oh, really? And they're like, yeah, we've got a lot of remote workers already, so we'll be good with that. But it's nice being in the office when I can be. But
yes, of course,
It certainly works out fine for me being remote. I'm able to stay informed and connected as much as I need to.
Mm. How often are you in the office then?
So at first I was in the office about once a month, unless I was really traveling a lot, but it's slowed down a little bit and I'm not there quite as often as I used to be, which is good. Cause I was traveling a lot for a while and it got tiring. So it's nice that it's a little slower right now, but it'll probably pick back up again later and I'll be traveling and back in the office a lot more often.
Okay. Yeah.
But I know Marco Cantu comes over from Italy to the Scotts Valley office probably four times a year, maybe my guess.
Yes. Yeah.
And so actually in also in Embarcadero has changed. They now have their Austin, Texas office is getting quite a bit larger as well.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
So
I didn't even know there was one in Texas. Yeah. Oh, okay.
That was, fairly recently, they started an office there, kind of a smaller sales office, but now it's kind of becoming the new headquarters, I guess, of Embarcadero.
Oh, okay.
Originally, the headquarters, the main office was on Embarcadero District in San Francisco. That's where the name came from.
Yeah.
And I think they still have the office there, but the main administrative office has moved elsewhere in California, still in San Francisco, a different address. And then, what I've heard is that there's a lot of people are moving to the Texas office. A lot of things going on there now.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So that's kind of exciting. The company as a whole is expanding, as well as the, efforts on Rad Studio are greatly expanding as well. So lots of great stuff going on. Mm-hmm. What's your next event coming up with Daypog you have in the near future?
The next event we have with Daypog is just a one-day meeting where we're going to have the general topic is going to be testing. A couple of the guys internally from the group are going to talk about testing, and we're going to do some hands-on with programming some different units and see what we can do to test these units. Mm-hmm. And then later on in October, we're going to have Jeroen Pleimers from Holland coming over for the biannually workshop, the two-day workshop that you attended 7 years ago.
Okay. What's he going to be speaking on?
He's going to be speaking on model view model, unit testing, maybe some dependency injection like we just seen on the skill sprint with Nick Hodges, but in that ball game.
Okay.
Making quality code. Yeah, I think the overall title is going to be something with quality code or something.
Right.
So that's going to be good.
Yeah. You're the main organizer of the meetings for Daypog?
I'm the main organizer of the workshops, the two-day workshops where that we have twice a year. Mm-hmm. And the workshops work in this way that we have, we try to every workshop have a foreign speaker. Not that we don't have any good speakers in Denmark, because we do, but we have found that people tend to listen better when it's with a foreign speaker that you don't see very often.
Sure.
We've invited, you've been there. We've had Kerry Jensen a couple of times. He's actually been very many times, which is very good. We've had Nick Hodges a couple of times. We've had Marco Cantu. So yeah, we've had some very good speakers coming over with various topics. Even Javier Pacheco has been here many years ago.
Wow. Hey, Denmark actually has I don't want to say unusually high concentration of good developers, but does have quite a few notable developers have come from Denmark.
Oh, yes. I don't know why, but yeah, we've had Anders Heilsberg is Danish, the father of Turbo Pascal and probably Delphi.
Yes.
And Bjarne Stolstrup, most people know from C++. He invented it.
Yes.
Which is also Danish. We do have quite a good amount of high-quality programmers here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because
And we're only 5 million people here.
Yeah, only 5 million people. Yeah, I was going to say Denmark seems like a smaller country, but 5 million people is still quite a few people.
yeah.
More than we have in the state of Idaho, even though Idaho's a pretty large state.
Okay, yeah.
Well, I think maybe, I don't know their current numbers for Idaho's population, mm-hmm. but probably mm-hmm. around just under 5 million would be my guess.
Yeah.
But, yeah. It was a great experience getting to come out to Denmark and visit there and see it. So it's interesting in the last few years, I guess, shortly before coming out to Denmark, I'd been to a couple other conferences in Europe and stuff, but getting to go out and see, the world and see, expand, you know, what I've seen and then talk to developers around the world and just see that everybody's doing interesting things and, mm-hmm. And such. It's certainly been eye-opening for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I do remember that you said when you were here that you've never seen a castle before.
That's right. I had never seen a castle before.
So, well, now you have. We took you to see a castle.
Yep, we went and saw a castle.
So that was pretty good.
Actually visiting there was a number of things. It was really eye-opening for me because I remember seeing each of the little townships or church or villages had a church in the middle of it that was hundreds of years old. And I was just thinking,
wow. Some of the churches we have here are older than your country.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, that church is older than my country.
Yeah.
My definition of old has completely just been rewritten.
Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned that, Jim, now, because every time we do have someone from the United States over here, That seems to be the concept, that we have ancient buildings that really are mind-blowing for you guys. But whenever we have people from other countries in Europe, like Marco Canto was here, their countries are just as old as ours. So that we have a church that dates back to 900 and something, that's nothing compared to him because, well, he has the same. So that's probably mostly Americans, or maybe even Australians too. Maybe they will also find it to be hard to believe that we have those old buildings. But just because a building's just over 1,000 years old doesn't mean we're going to knock it down or anything.
Yeah, it's interesting when we have foreigners here in the U.S. It's apparently one of the popular things to do is take them to. One of the buffet places like Golden Corral or something like that we have here, because that's mm-hmm. apparently a totally foreign concept to Europeans.
Okay. I don't know what that is.
So we have these restaurants where you go in and you just pay it like an admission at the door, and they give you a stack of plates, and there's food everywhere, and you just go fill up your plate and eat, and then fill it up again.
Okay, so it's like eat what you can for... I don't know, $50 or something.
Yeah, less than that.
Okay,
but yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing. My kids love going there.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because they,
my brother told me about a similar place to that they had in maybe it was Vietnam or something, but because of food shortage, so to speak, if whatever you left over. you had to pay extra for. So when you left the restaurant, they weighed whatever you had left on your plate. If you had grabbed something from the buffet and you didn't eat it, you had to pay extra for it.
Yeah. Actually, I was at a sushi place that was that way. It's all you can eat sushi, but you paid for what you didn't eat.
Yes.
But anyway.
I like that concept. I like that concept.
Yeah, I agree. People should waste food.
Because you can just go 10 times if you want to.
Yep.
Yeah.
I like getting, when I do places like that, I like getting a few small things. It's like, I'll just taste a little bit of this, taste a little bit of that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like that too. Yeah. Oh, we got sidetracked there, didn't we?
We did get sidetracked. Yeah. Okay. These things rock talking about restaurants and ages of countries and such.
Well, anyway, the Daypook concept that apart from the twice a year workshops that we have about four, maybe five times a year, we have one-day meetings where we meet up, and this is very informal. We just meet up, and we have a few topics, and it's members of the group that will present the topics. We'll go through it, discuss it, see what works, see what won't work, and then everyone leaves the meeting probably, hopefully, some richer in knowledge.
I think that's an important idea, is to see what works, see what doesn't work. So many times the presenters are like, I just want to show what works. But I think that a lot of learning occurs when things don't work. And you're like, oh, why didn't this work? Yeah. What can we do to fix that?
Mm-hmm. That's right. And we do a lot of, let's try and see if we can make this work. And then everyone throws ideas at whoever's at the presentation stand. Mm-hmm. And we try it. Well, that doesn't work. Okay, does anyone have any other idea? And finally, we might get it to work. And maybe we won't get it to work, which is fine, because then we don't, okay, this doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think being willing to, in that, being willing to be the person up in front in that situation and try things and have them not work is a big stretch for people, because you want it, when you're presenting, you want everything to work and you want to look like you know what you're doing. But to be willing to try things and have them not work is I believe, is a huge thing.
Yeah, but what you must remember here, Jim, is that Daypook, our Delphi users group, is even older than Delphi. We're a 25 years old Delphi group.
Oh, wow.
We started, the group started with... what's the name? The database. Paradox.
Paradox.
Yes. Originally, the group was Danish Paradox Users Group.
Oh, okay.
And then when Delphi came along, we changed the name to Delphi and Paradox Users Group. So we're still having the same acronym.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep.
yeah. But now no one uses Paradox anymore. So now it's the Database Application Programmers Users Group.
Interesting.
Which doesn't really say that it's Delphi, but it is Delphi. It's a users group of Embarcadero technology.
Yeah.
So very, very few people of the group are C++, but there are some C++, because the main concept and the way to do it is the same, whether it's a C++ builder or Delphi. It's just only the syntax that's different.
Yep. The our local developer group here in Idaho, and in Boise, I just live just outside Boise, Idaho. It's now the BSDG, Boise Software Developers Group. But originally, way back in the day, it was the Clipper Developer Group, which then became the Delphi Developer Group for one point. And then became, I don't know, something else. But I was the one that renamed it back to the Boise Software Developers Group, and had I was running it at the time. We had a emphasis on Delphi, but I have moved away and moved back now, and someone else is running it now, and it's not as many Delphi presentations as I would like to see. But when I get the chance, I go out there and present on Delphi.
Okay, cool.
So now, has Daypog always been infrequent meetings, or is it something with the rise of the internet, people are meeting less often, or how do you see the internet impacting developer group meetings?
Well, the actual meetings, the internet doesn't impact that at all, because we still have the same number of attendees at the meetings. But we do also have a mailing list, which kind of works similar to Stack Overflow or something.
Mm-hmm.
If someone runs into a problem or some piece of useful information, he or she will post an email on the mailing list, and everyone in the group will get it.
Okay.
So, very often when we get new members of the group, they'll post something and they're surprised because 5, maybe 10 minutes later, they have a complete solution to their problem. That's often the case.
Mm-hmm.
So it's extremely easy and extremely fast. This does, however, sometimes tend to make some people lazy. So they're going to ask the group rather than go and try and figure it out yourself.
Yeah.
But without having it in the rule book or anything, we don't have points or anything like that. We just have the list. But everyone easily spots whoever's lazy, and then the answers will maybe directly or maybe indirectly suggest, could you please go and Google this yourself?
Yep.
So yeah,
I get
some things are so easy to find just using a standard search engine on the internet. Mm-hmm. That there's no reason to not search for it for yourself.
Yeah, I get lots of questions directed to me from developers wanting to figure out how to do things, and I'm usually happy to help, but occasionally you get those.
I'm happily to help too, but yeah, sometimes it's just, well, come on, you change the caption on a button, come on.
Yeah, exactly. I get the ones that's like, if you type exactly what you just typed to me in Google, the first result is the answer you're looking for.
Yeah,
or the ones that are like, okay, now write the code to do what I used to explain to me how to do. I was like, no, I'm sorry, you write that code.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm happy to point you in the right direction, but you're the one.
Yeah, sure. And we, even in this group, we'll be happy to write code to each other. If it's some complex bit of code, I don't know, what code do I have to write to get two indie components to talk to each other through TCP/IP? Well, maybe someone will do a little stub on that.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I used to be in a few different mailing lists. I haven't been on Stack Overflow as much as I used to be, but I used to be on the mailing lists quite a bit.
And yeah.
It was quite common that I would see someone ask a question. I'm like, oh, that's an interesting question, and I'll, you know, figure out how to do it and write quite a bit of code.
Yeah.
But yeah, exactly. Okay, well, I think we should probably wrap up here.
Okay.
It's been great chatting with you this morning, or I guess it's afternoon for you.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Today, it's been great chatting with you today.
5 o'clock now. You got to chat to you too, Jim.
Yeah, I haven't talked in a while, so excited about. I guess now, should we mention that you're starting on a Delphi learning to program with Delphi book?
Yes, I have started a beginner's book for Delphi programming. I got the first couple of chapters written, so yeah, that's going to be interesting. Hopefully, I'm going to get time to do some more work on it, so I can get it out as soon as possible.
I was just chatting with Nick Hodges. He just finished his More Coding in Delphi book.
Yes.
Apparently, Sundays are his day he writes. He goes to
the local
restaurant and gets a refillable drink and just sits and writes and drinks all day.
Yep. Yep.
He says now that he's done with his book, he's not sure what to do with his Sundays anymore.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he'll have to do something with family now.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. I think that's important. It's set apart time. I'm not always good at setting apart. This time is for doing these projects, but
yeah. And then sometimes you have customers banging on your door wanting stuff, and
exactly. It seems like every time I get really some sort of routine going, then it's like, oh, hey, we need you to do this now. This needs to happen. It's like, oh,
yeah.
All right, we'll just rearrange.
Exactly. Yeah.
You got to stay fluid, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's exciting. Now, this is going to be a learning to program in Delphi, or is it going to be learning Delphi? So, is it going to expect people to know how to program already, or is it going to be teaching program using Delphi?
And actually, I gave that quite a lot of thought before I started writing it, but I agreed with myself that anyone who wants to learn to program in Delphi, even if they have programmed in another language, they're going to want quite a beginner's book anyway. Mm-hmm. So, I'm going to make this book so that you can learn to program from scratch, even if you don't have any programming experience beforehand. Obviously, some of the stuff like explaining what's an integer compared to a floating point, compared to a char, compared to a string, experienced programmers will probably just skip those bits. But it's still interesting for experienced programmers to know, for instance, a string doesn't behave the same way in C++ as it does in Delphi. So you still have to know the basics. You still have to go more or less from beginner's guide if you come from another language.
Mm-hmm. Okay, excellent. That'll be great.
Yeah.
So good to have. It's seeing a lot more Delphi books lately.
Yes, there have been quite a few Delphi books coming out, which I think is great.
Yep. I think one that's in that very fundamentals is someplace we've kind of needed. So that's great to
work on that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Fantastic. Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time, Jens.
You're welcome. And thank you very much for having me.
It was my pleasure. And I look forward to talking to you later.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the podcast at Delphi.org. For more information about this episode and more, visit our website, Delphi.org. Until next time, may all your code compile and your programs be exceptional. Our theme music is by Phil Smith.